Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for August 2006. This is issue number 257. I'm Fred Volpe, and my address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. The cost of a subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. and Canadian members is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using the PayPal credit card system. You can also sign up to edxn.com and get your DX Audio Service for your computer or iPod player. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with our PayPal credit card system, or contact Wayne Heinen at 4131 South Andes Way, Aurora, Colorado, 80013-3831 if you want to pay by check. Well, we've got a fully packed issue. Let's jump right into Captain Bill Hale's AM Switch.
Thank you, Fred, and welcome everyone again to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for August 2006. First of all, let's check those call letter changes. On 620, WTMT Louisville, Kentucky has changed to WTUV. On 860, KPMP in Modesto, California has changed to KMPH. 980 WAAA, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, their new call WTIX. On 1160, WMLB, East Point, Georgia, changed to WWAA for a few days, but then turned around and changed to WCFO. So bottom line is, 1160 in East Point is WCFO. 1230 WTIX, Florence, South Carolina, is now known as WOLS. 1310 KOCR Joplin, Missouri changed to KZRG. 1330, a new station up in Juneau, Alaska, they've taken the call letters KTNL. 1400 WBAU Fort Walton Beach, Florida, their new call is WTKE. 1450 WKXW Atlantic City, New Jersey, they now call themselves WENJ. Up on 1680, KTFH in Seattle, Washington, their new call, KDOW. And on 1690, WWAA, Avondale Estates, Georgia, their new call, WMLB. So you get the connection there between that 1160 station and the 1690 station. Now, we just came across an unreported call change for the 1600 station in Huntsville, Alabama, so I thought we'd square everything away just in case. Now, the three stations involved are 1190 in Moulton, Alabama, and the 1600 and 1700 stations in Huntsville. All these stations, by the way, are owned by the same company. In January 2006, the 1600 station and the 1700 station swapped calls to become WEUV and WEUP, respectively. Then, in February, the 1190 station and the 1600 station swapped calls to be WEUV and WHIY, respectively. So we end up with WEUV on 1190, WHIY on 1600, and WEUP on 1700, just in case there was some confusion there in the call letter category. By the way, we've got some more news about WEUP 1600, which is now WHIY, in just a couple of minutes. Well, I'm calling this category, They're Back, But Part 2. On 1700, WJCC Miami Springs, Florida has resurfaced. Remember, we reported that KYDZ 1180 in Bellevue, Nebraska had returned to the air after its X-band sister station turned 5 years old. By the way, 1180 is now Spanish programming as La Bonita. Well, an internet report now says that WJCC has returned to the scene even after having its license canceled and calls deleted by the FCC. Well, keep those pencils handy and erasers sharp, or is it the other way around? Moving on now to construction permits on the air, 740 WMIN in Hudson, Wisconsin is on the air, with a power increase becoming a D3 2500 during the day and nothing at night. And 1270 WMKT Charlevoix, Michigan is on the air with their power boost to become U2 27,000 watts during the day and 5,000 watts at night. And this just in, we've just received word that KMPH 840 in Modesto, California is on the air with U4, 5,000 watts day and night, using the former KTRB studios and the old 860 transmitter site. Remember, 860 in Modesto has been taken off the air and is moving to San Francisco. Some new station activity to report. On 870, a new station will soon be taking the airwaves in Reading, Pennsylvania. They've been granted U4, 850 watts during the day and 225 watts at night from six towers, using two during the day and six at night. On 890, a new station has been approved in Exmoor, Virginia. They'll have U4, 220 watts day and night from three towers, using all those towers day and night. Exmoor is in the VA portion of the Delmarva Peninsula, northeast of Newport News. Both patterns are directed southeast out into the Atlantic Ocean. On 1450, a new station has been approved in South Shore, Kentucky. They've been granted a kilowatt day and night, non-directional. That's U1, of course. And on 1490, a new station in Del Norte, Colorado has been granted U1, 1,000 watts, day and night. Now an update on a new station not yet on the air. KUCU in Farmington, New Mexico had a CP for U4, 1,500 watts during the day, 250 watts at night on 1090 kilohertz, but then filed for U13, 10,000 watts during the day, 250 watts at night, and 10,000 watts during critical hours. Remember, U13 means the same pattern during day and critical hour operation, and a different pattern at night. Now, they filed for 1060 kilohertz. The latest request has also been granted, so at this writing, KUCU has two CPs, but we can only assume they'll be canceling the first one and building the facility on 1060. Grants to existing facilities, 790 KBRV, Soda Springs, Idaho. A CP has been granted to add night service. When operational, they'll be U1, 5,000 daytime watts and 29 watts at night. KTIS 900, Minneapolis, Minnesota, has been granted a CP to increase their day and night power levels to become U4, 50,000 watts during the day and 500 watts at night. 1050 KCAA Loma Linda, California, a CP has been granted to add nighttime service as U4, 1,400 watts during the day and 35 watts at night. 1290 WTMI West Hartford, Connecticut, a CP has been granted to move to West Hartford from Hartford with U1, 490 watts during the day and 11 watts at night. 1380 CKPC Brantford, Ontario, has been approved for a power upgrade to be U4, 25,000 watts day and night. They will add a 180-foot tower to their inline array of four. For both day and night patterns, they'll be adjusted slightly and, of course, be enlarged significantly. 1510 WAUK, Waukesha, Wisconsin, CP has been granted to increase day power and add CH operation as D4, 23,000 watts during the day, 20,000 watts during critical hours. They'll add a tower to their standing two. 1550 KKJY in Albuquerque, New Mexico. A CP has been granted for U1, 5,000 watts during the day, 27 watts at night, co-locating to the KKIM 1000 tower. 1560 WTOD Toledo, Ohio. A CP has been granted to move to a new two-tower site and reduce their power to become D3, 2,500 watts during the day. And 1600 KRKE, Albuquerque, New Mexico, a CP has been granted for U1, 10,000 daytime watts, 175 watts at night, co-locating to the KXKS 1190 tower. Some applications from Canada, CHLN on 550 in Troy Riviera, applies to move to 106.9 with 60,000 watts ERP at 86.9 meters. 590 CKRS, Saguenay, Quebec, applies to move to 98.3 megahertz with 100,000 watts ERP at 147.6 meters. By the way, Saguenay, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, S-A-G-U-E-N-A-Y, not John Kier, is listed as the application city. 630 CHLT Sherbrooke, Quebec, applies to move to 102.1 with 5,800 watts ERP at 91 meters, 1150 CJRC Gatineau, Ontario applies to move to 104.7 with 2900 watts ERP at 95 meters. Once again, a slight change in the city of license here. Gatineau appears on the application and not Ottawa for CJRC. On 1450, CFAB Windsor, Nova Scotia applies to move to 92.9 with 47,000 watts ERP at 159 meters. And a new station in Brampton, Ontario on 1650 has been applied for. They're applying for a kilowatt day and night. By condition of the license, the applicant proposes to direct ethnic programming to a minimum of 7 cultural groups in a minimum of 5 different languages per broadcast week. Well, we've been hitting on a few of these in the past, almost likely due to lack of proper license renewal action, but these stations officially are canceled and the call letters are deleted. 1240 KBEL, Idabel, Oklahoma. 1240 KXOX, Sweetwater, Texas. 1430 KALV, Alva, Oklahoma. 1560 KKUZ, Salisaw, Oklahoma. 1590 KELP El Paso, Texas, and 1600 KUSH Cushing, Oklahoma. Don't erase those yet from your logs, as like I said, these are probably all due to license renewal application snafus. Here's some news to use this month. 920 WBAA West Lafayette, Indiana, reported as having their license canceled due to license lapse last time. They've been issued a special temporary authority to continue broadcasting as they claim they did file for renewal in 2004 as scheduled. It should be all sorted out in government time. And 1600 WHIY, Huntsville, Alabama, as promised before. We have to back up a bit on this one, all the way to 2004. Licensed for U2 5,000 daytime watts, 500 watts at night, WHIY, then WEUP applied to relocate to the tower of sister station WEUV 1700 about a mile away and reduce their nighttime power to 11 watts. The FCC granted this construction permit. According to the 1600 station's timeline on the FCC database, the station's renewal request was denied in January 2005, and we have no details on that. Now, the CP for U1, 5,000 watts during the day and 11 watts at night, has been dismissed, probably due to the fact that the license is supposed to be deleted in addition to inaction on the part of the licensee and the fact that the 1700 X-bander is over 5 years old. WHIY is still licensed for U2, 5,000 watts during the day, 500 watts at night in the FCC database, so stay tuned on that one. Stations reported back on the air this past month, KTBA 1050, Tuba City, Arizona, with Religion, and they're simulcasting KHAC 880, and KBFL 1060, Springfield, Missouri, they're simulcasting KBFL 99.9 MHz in Buffalo, Missouri, with a Music of Your Life format. But reported as silent, WVOS 1240, Liberty, New York. WAMS 1260 Newark, Delaware, as temporarily was off and may be back by the time you hear this. And also off WFBS 1280 in Berwick, Pennsylvania. Well, my thanks go out to Sean Axelrod, Dave Schmidt, Jerry Starr, and Dean McIntyre, as well as Radio World Online for information and tidbits used this month. Well, Mickey's hands show my time has expired, so we must head southeastward across the Gulf of Mexico to Florida's Sun Coast, where we check in with John Bowker for this month's travelogue. National
Radio Club. Well, thanks once again, Bill Hale. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the travelogue, where we are covering the whole country from east to west with our dials locked at the 960 kilohertz position. In fact, today we're going to be jumping across the big one, the Mississippi River, as we get into K-Land with our station breaks. We're going to start in Minnesota. Now, Minnesota, of course, lies on both sides of the Mississippi, I know that. But we're going to go to Little Falls, Minnesota, which is northwest of Minneapolis, oh, about 60 miles or so, where we find a station with 5,000 watts during the daytime hours, playing oldies, but then at night they go down to 38 watts, so they're probably going to be an outstanding DX catch if you can hear them at all. In fact, I just went to see what their latest program log is, and I see they have Hugh Hewitt. That program's on in the late evening hours. And they even have Golden Age of Radio Theater after 11 o'clock at night. That suggests they may not stay on much after midnight, but anyway, we'll leave that to you.
And here's a recording that's just a year old, made by Mark Durenberger from his home state, as we begin the August 2006 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
It's 5 o'clock and you're listening to AM 960 KLTF Little Falls. I'm Brian Patrick. News, weather, and sports are coming your way next.
Liquor, beer, and wine is all we do. Westside Liquor.
Ah, yes, got to get those liquor ads in before the news. Well, the next state we come to, south of Minnesota, as we head down the Mississippi River, will be Iowa. And in Iowa, we come to the only three-letter call sign broadcasting at 960 kilohertz in the United States. That'll be KMA in Shenandoah. They're celebrating 81 years on the air. They came on in 1925. So for that, we'll give them two cuts in today's travelogue. The first one goes back 16 years. And at that time, we only were keeping the ID itself, if you remember.
This is KMA Shenandoah at 10 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm Bob Walker.
And here's a recording of KMA made in 1998.
Currently, we have 81 degrees under cloud cover at the KMA studios. Wind is out of the northwest at around 5 miles per hour. Barometric pressure holding steady at 30.09 inches. And humidity right now stands at 72%. Again, 81 degrees. You're listening to Regional Radio, KMA 960 in Shenandoah, Iowa. ABC News is next. Your time is 2 o'clock.
From ABC News, I'm John Belmont. Here's the payoff on all those congressional hearings skewering the IRS. The Senate has voted 96-2 to approve the biggest overhaul in tax collection history.
Well, I, for one, couldn't be more pleased to learn that the people who are watching out for our taxes are taking such good care of us. Yes, indeed. What do you say we move down the Mississippi once again? Our next state would be Missouri. And down at the very heel of Missouri, the southern little part that sticks down into Arkansas, is where we find Cape Girardeau, Missouri. This 500-watt station at night has the longest list of affiliations of any station I've seen today. They are with CBS and ABC. They have Rush Limbaugh in the afternoon, late morning. Talk show hosts all the time, and ESPN to fill in the gaps, and they call themselves News Radio. So let's go down to Cape Girardeau and take a sound bite of them.
The Playdium is your summer baseball sports connection. The Playdium, across from Houck Stadium.
KZIM News, no sooner done than said. News Radio, 960 KZIM, Cape Girardeau.
CBS News, I'm Sam Litzinger.
And just south of Missouri is Arkansas, and we have a daytimer in Arkansas. Well, it's got 500 watts for pre-sunrise authority, and just a short distance north of Little Rock. Actually, it's halfway from Branson, Missouri to Little Rock, Arkansas. We hear the Christian radio voice of KCGS.
You're listening to AM 960 KCGS in Marshall. Your time is 9 o'clock.
USA Radio Network News, this is John Scott. It's time to batten down the hatches. Hurricane Bonnie's winds have now reached the North Carolina coast.
No, wait a minute. Not on this program. We don't discuss hurricanes, particularly during the month of August and September and October and like that. Well, we're going to continue our trip down the Mississippi River, and we're almost to the southernmost point of that part of our trip. We get into state number 31, Louisiana, and just about 10 miles from the Gulf of Mexico, where a hurricane can strike at almost any time. And what do we find? We find Nostalgia Radio at 960 on our AM radio dial.
As Joel Sonier, Chanalise at KROF, AM and FM in Abbeville. Don't forget tonight when you go to bed, turn those clocks back. Remember that. And we're glad that you're with us this morning at KROF in Abbeville. Commence ce matin, ça peut près 60 degrés, about 60 degrees on the outside. Et le haut aujourd'hui va être 75, 75 for high. It's looking good all over Acadiana and East Texas, too.
Ah, très bien. And heading west out of Abbeville, we come to the Lone Star State. And right up in the northeast corner of Texas is a 1,000-watt daytimer in the community called Mount Pleasant.
Don't forget that Lotto Texas jackpot, now only $4 million. I'm Julius Grawl.
News and Country, 960 KIMP, Mount Pleasant, Omaha, Naples.
From the Washington News Desk, I'm Michael Harrington.
Power out, trees down, and some local flooding, but that appears to be the extent of damage in central Florida today caused by Aaron, the hurricane that came ashore last night and has since been downgraded to a tropical storm.
Sheesh, I can't get away from it this month. My hand slipped off the delete button. Oh well. Now, if you drive straight west in Texas, all the way out to the high country, you're going to come to San Angelo. And there we have a 5,000-watt station. It's all news talk right now. They have coast-to-coast all night, by the way. But at the time we were there in 1994, it was hardly news talk. Listen.
96 is KTKL San Angelo, rocking your world 24 hours a day.
Well, from out in the hill country with our dials locked at 960, we'll go up into, some more civilization and sooner country. Just outside of Oklahoma City, about 50 miles, is the town of Enid. And now, this 1,000-watt station, both day and night, claims to be in the Oklahoma City market. 50 miles? Well, as we used to say in Vermont, maybe with a strong wind.
Tonight at 8 Central, 10 Mountain on Discovery Channel. Explore your world.
KGWA Enid, home of Philstead Electric.
Good morning and welcome to an invitation to inspiration. I'm Pastor Don Tynes. I'll be with you here for the next 25 minutes or so.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to be driving out of range, Pastor, but we're going to go up into Nebraska now. And head west, almost to the Colorado border, for the city of 15,000, Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. And KNEB runs 5,000 watts during the important daytime hours for farm information and like that. But at night they go down to 350 watts, probably for local high school sports. Wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Stay tuned. We do have Royals baseball coming up here at 11:10 in just a few minutes. This is KNEB, Scotts Bluff, Gehring, Nebraska.
From ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. New developments in connection with the TWA crash. Here's ABC's James Walker at the Crash Command Center on Long Island.
Ah, yes, that was just 10 years ago. Flight 800, TWA. Well, we're going to continue our trek north on this travelogue and get up into Montana. In fact, just about the most westerly city in Montana is called Baker, and it has a population of fewer than 2,000, and there are no big cities within 50 to 100 miles of it. And yet it's got this 5,000-watt station. I have to put it in the category of somebody's hobby.
96 KFLN.
Baker. Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Linda Moore. President Bush is back at the White House after a weekend in Texas and Indiana.
And if you listened very closely, you would have heard the word Baker right after the call letters. Oh, well. We're going to head now way south into Injun territory in Farmington, New Mexico. And in 1997, Mark Strickert passed through town, and this is what he picked up from KNDN.
KNDN, Farmington.
Now, we're going to start in Phoenix, Arizona, with our September travelogue, so I'm looking forward to that. And say, in addition to those I mentioned as we went along, I want to credit the following people who sent in recordings that we used in today's travelogue. Bob Jedruziak from Trenton, New Jersey. Our own son John Bowker from Valparaiso, Indiana. Ernie Wasilowski from Omaha. John W. Smith, he's also out in the Midwest. And Scott Feibusch, who's all over the United States, as best I can tell. Thanks, fellas. Now, this is my last chance to remind you about the big Akron convention coming up at the end of this month. After August 11th, I can no longer guarantee any rooms will be available for the low price that we negotiated way back last year at the Best Western. So if you haven't called in for a room yet or made arrangements to stay with somebody else in a room that they have reserved, be sure to call this phone number, 1-330-794-1050. And the other important thing is to let me know that you're coming, because if I don't have your reservation down, we won't have any of the stuff ready for you when you arrive. The address is John Bowker, B-O-W-K-E-R, P.O. Box 5192, Sun City Center, Florida, 33571. Hey, I'm looking forward to seeing you and everybody else who's already registered. It's going to be a ball. And now it's time for Mark Durenberger on the audio service. Mark?
National Radio Club.
Thank you, John. Mark Durenberger here for the DX Audio Service. It's midsummer, and that means it's time for our Midsummer Madness. This time around, we're going to bring you two remote broadcasts as heard on radio. The first, actually not a live broadcast, was being recorded on disc at Lakehurst, New Jersey, May 6, 1937. It was an eyewitness account of the docking of the dirigible Hindenburg by Herbert Morrison on assignment for WLS. What began as a routine reporting assignment ended up being one of the most widely circulated news broadcasts of the century. Now, you've probably heard snips of this broadcast, but you may not have heard the entire recording, and that's why we're bringing this to you. You'll note how Mr. Morrison's reporter's objectivity is overwhelmed by the emotion of what he's seeing. We turn back the clock now to May 6th, 1937, to Lakehurst, New Jersey, and announcer Herbert Morrison.
We both flew down from Chicago yesterday afternoon aboard one of the giant new 21-passenger flagships of American Airlines. It took us only 3 hours, 55 minutes to fly nonstop from Chicago to New York. When we landed at Newark, we found another flagship of American Airlines waiting to take us to Lakehurst with our equipment when we were ready to go. And incidentally, American Airlines is the only airline in the United States which makes connections with the Hindenburg. The Hindenburg left Frankfurt, Germany, Tuesday evening, rather, at 7:30 their time. And for better than 2.5 days, they've been speeding through the skies over miles and miles of water here to America. Now they're coming in to make a landing of the Zeppelin. I'm going to step out here and cover it from the outside. So as I move out, we'll just stand by a second. Well, here it comes, ladies and gentlemen. We're out now outside of the hangar, and what a great sight it is, a thrilling one. It's a marvelous sight. It's coming down out of the sky, pointed directly towards us and toward the mooring mast. The mighty diesel motors just roared, the propellers biting into the air and throwing it back into a gale-like whirlpool. No wonder this great floating palace can travel through the air at such a speed with these powerful motors behind it. Now, a field that we thought active when we first arrived has turned into a moving mass of cooperative action. The landing crews have rushed to the posts and spots, and orders are being passed along, and last-minute preparations are being completed for the moment we have waited for so long. The ship is riding majestically toward us like some great feather, riding as though it was mighty, mighty proud of the place it's playing in the world's aviation. The ship is no doubt busting with activity, as we can see. Orders are shouted to the crew. The passengers probably lining the windows, looking down at the field ahead of them, getting their glimpse of the mooring mast. It's practically standing still now. They've dropped ropes out of the nose of the ship, and it's been taken a hold of down on the field by a number of men. It's starting to rain again. The rain had slacked up a little bit. The back motors of the ship are just holding it just enough to keep it from... It bursts into flames. Get it started. It's crashing. It's crashing terrible. Oh, my. Get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring mast and all the folks between it. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 500 feet into the sky. It's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. The smoke and the flames now, and the frame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the passengers screaming around here. I can't even talk to people. His friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen. Honest, it's just laying there a mass of smoking wreckage. And everybody can't hardly breathe and talk and screaming. Lady, I'm sorry. Honestly, I can hardly breathe. I'm going to step inside where I cannot see it. Charlie, that's terrible. Listen, folks, I'm going to have to stop for a minute because I've lost my voice. This is the worst thing I've ever witnessed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I've sort of recovered from the terrific explosion and the terrific crash that occurred just as it was being pulled down to the mooring mast. The terrible amount of hydrogen gas in it just caused the tail surface broke into flame first,
Then there was a terrific explosion, and that followed by the burning of the nose and the crashing nose into the ground, and everybody tearing back at breakneck speed to get out from underneath it, because it was over the people at the time it burst into flames. Now, whether it fell on the people who were witnessing it, we do not know. But as it exploded, they rushed back. And now it's smoking, a terrific black smoke floating up into the sky. The flames are still leaping maybe 30, 40 feet from the ground, the entire 811 feet length of it. They're frantically calling for ambulances and things. The wires are being humming with activity. And I've lost my breath several times during this exciting moment here. Will you pardon me just a moment? I'm not going to stop talking. I'm just going to swallow several times until I can keep on. I should imagine that the nose is not more than 500 feet or maybe 700 feet from the mooring mast. They had dropped two ropes, and whether or not some spark or something set it on fire, we don't know, or whether something pulled loose on the inside of the ship causing a spark and causing it to explode in the tail surface. But everything crashed to the ground, and there's not a possible chance of anybody being saved. I wish I could stop in just a moment and see if I can get my breath again. And Charlie, if you'll fade it out just a minute, I'll come back with more description, ladies and gentlemen. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm back again. I raced down to the burning ship, and just as I walked up to the ship, climbed over the picket line, I met a man coming out dazed. He couldn't find his way. I grabbed a hold of him. It's Philip Mangone. Philip Mangone, A-N-G-O-N-E, of New York. Philip Mangone, he's burned terribly in the hands, and he's burned terribly in the face, his eyebrows, and all his hair is burned off, but he's walking and talking plainly and distinctly, and he told me he jumped. He jumped with other passengers. Now, there's a Mr. Spay. It sounds like Spay. We're not sure of it. And he also got out. Now, it is my sincere hope the majority of the passengers jumped when it came close to the ground, according to what Mr. Mangone told me. He says, thank God he jumped, and we say thank God for him also.
The Hindenburg, a German Zeppelin, destroyed by fire while landing at Lakehurst Naval Air Station in New Jersey, May 6, 1937. And that was the original recording by Herbert Morrison. Next, we turn to the American Forces Radio Network, AFN Europe. This was a Halloween remote broadcast, and after it had been set up, some of the staff thought they'd have a little fun with the remote announcer. Here is an example of a broadcast in which a practical joke got way out of hand.
In late autumn of 1952, the American Forces Network made the front page of the London Times and caused a sensation across Europe with a special Halloween program. Program director Hunt Downs asked for three volunteers among the AFN announcing staff. He took them and a couple of engineers to the old Frankenstein Castle near Darmstadt. They arrived at the dismal, fog-shrouded castle just before midnight, which was airtime. The announcer explained that the myth of the Frankenstein Castle claims Dr. Frankenstein's monster returns every 100 years. And he added, "This is the night." Each of the three announcers was given a walkie-talkie and a penlight flashlight and sent to different parts of the castle to report on what they saw and heard. There was no script. It was completely ad-lib, and what a psychological experiment. Announcer Carl Nelson's assignment was to enter the Frankenstein family crypt far beneath the old castle. He was told he'd be the first man to go down there in decades. What he didn't know was that the show's producer had set up a statue in the center of the crypt, and at the height of Nelson's self-induced fear, the producer pulled a string and toppled the statue. The following was aired just as it happened.
You and I together are going to see what is in the old tomb. We're going to shut the door behind us. And right now, all 700 years of the history of this castle comes out in the view as we stand here in almost utter darkness, scraping our feet to watch our way. And we actually see that
we have knocked over something here that... Oh, excuse me, just one second, but what? seems like this is some type of a... When that fell, ladies and gentlemen, you can imagine what ran through our mind. It seemed like some type of a... Trying to kick it with our foot, something maybe that looks like a church window that may have been used in a burial service or something, and we're bending over to try to see it. Thank goodness it isn't. We can report it. It isn't alive or anything near being alive. We're shining our light up on the wall as we heard something. No, you'll excuse the gasp, but our light is fading and it's on something that looks like a statue. Yes, it is just a statue, but an ungodly statue. We're kicking a chain. We're going to try to... This is ridiculous, ladies and gentlemen. We are scared because of what fell down on the floor here, but we're going to go up and examine this statue right now. It is a horrible-looking statue, much like the monster, perhaps something put here years ago, maybe the original mold. It is very eerie, to say the least, as this misty moon is coming through the window. But we don't believe in these things, and we're going to walk up and touch this to see perhaps what it could be made of. It may be of wax or plaster. No, it couldn't. It seemed to move as we came up upon it. No, this is ridiculous. No. It did move. That it's not wax. I'm getting out of here. Please, God, no. Oh, help. Help, please, help. Please. Can't you hear? No. No. No.
At this point, we should explain that Nelson tried to get out of the crypt only to find the door locked. He fainted. With the mic open, the crew rushed to his side. The last thing listeners heard was someone saying, "This thing has gone far enough. Let's get out of here."
Well, there are two examples of two completely different remote broadcasts. Part of our Midsummer Madness. I'm Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service. Enjoy the Akron, Ohio NRC show, and we're sorry we won't be there to meet you. But we will be back here on most of this same cassette 30 days from now. Till then, good listening, DXers.
Hi again, DXers. Ken Anastyuk here on a nice warm day in May here in Chicagoland. And I have a very interesting column here from... local Southtown columnist, the veteran Tim Cronin, who's been doing these great columns for years that you've heard on various subjects. And he brings us this column on Keith Jackson. When Keith Jackson announced his twice and for all retirement last weekend in late April, an American television era ended. Jackson was the last man remaining from a distinguished group of play-by-play announcers hired by Rune Arledge for ABC Sports. Beginning with Jim McKay in 1961 and continuing through Jackson, Chris Schenkel, Kurt Gowdy, Bud Palmer, Bill Fleming, Frank Gifford, and Al Michaels, Arledge built a cast of all-stars to work his marquee events with an equal sterling collection of analysts, or the so-called expert commentators. One of those was Howard Cosell, who really fit no description short of iconoclast. But after anyone from Eric Segal to Jackie Stewart to Frank Broyles had his say in Arledge's world, it was the play-by-play announcer, more than the analyst, Cosell accepted, who put the verbal frame around ABC's pictures. With his southern twang, Jackson did so for 40 years, calling everything from auto racing at Darlington to cliff diving into the bay at Acapulco, along with the United States' two greatest individual achievements in the Olympics, Mark Spitz's 7 gold medals in the swimming at Munich and Eric Heiden's 5 gold medals in speed skating at Lake Placid, New York. Oh, and aside from working the inaugural year of ABC's NFL Monday Night Football, Keith Jackson established himself as the voice of college football, supplanting Lindsey Nelson and Schenkel. So divided is the TV audience today, with a dozen or more games televised every Saturday during the season, nobody will be able to earn that sobriquet again, at least not without a publicity campaign. Jackson was handed it because he gained and kept the number one slot in ABC's college lineup for nearly 3 decades, in an era when the only network TV competition was from ABC's other doubleheader game. Only after his original retirement in 1999 did Jackson beg off the cross-country travel and take a slate of games largely on the West Coast, including the Rose Bowl, as a requirement for staying in the booth. And reading between the lines of last week's announcements, a request by ABC that he travel more broadly this coming season finally met with his disapproval. The money the network was planning to throw at him regardless. At 77, he wanted to stay close to home, and who could blame him? So, without a final homespun allegory, except those that might find their way into another Gatorade commercial or two, Jackson called it quits. And the Arledge era at ABC ends. Only McKay, the octogenarian wordsmith, contributes the rare voiceover these days. Aside from a long-ago recorded introduction to Wide World of Sports, he was last heard on a feature during the Super Bowl pregame show. All the others are either retired, dead, or in a singular case of Michaels on a different network. Wide World has for several years been only an umbrella title for ABC's weekend sports rather than the department's Hallmark broadcast. Even the NFL has disappeared, trading Monday and ABC for Sunday and NBC, which Michaels decided to chase after and caught, realizing that ESPN Monday Night Football just doesn't cut it. It really isn't ABC Sports anymore. It's ESPN using the ABC Sports name, with ESPN announcers on the air, with ESPN graphics except for the network symbol, with an ESPN mentality, all of it run by ESPN-bred executives, some of whom may work in New York but have Bristol, Connecticut in their hearts. Last Sunday's ABC telecast of the Bulls-Miami game at the United Center Chicago was an ESPN-produced show, complete with play-by-play man Mike Tirico, who cut his teeth on SportsCenter before gaining ABC visibility. It's a far cry from the days when Arledge controlled ABC Sports and ABC News from 1977 forward, never failing to award a bonus or use 3 extra cameras or spend an extra million for the Olympics. Anything was worthwhile if it would make the show better. That willingness to outfox CBS and NBC made ABC's self-proclaimed mantra recognized around the world as the leader in sports television, as they said, ring true for decades, even after ABC bought 80% of ESPN, a 3-year-old bathing in red ink, in 1982. Later in the decade, ABC was bought by Capital Cities Communications, and the Cap City folks looked at the ABC Sports and ESPN budgets and realized that the little guys in Bristol could stretch a buck further. That doomed Arledge's golden budgets, and he soon moved to ABC News exclusively. Roone died in 2002. With Jackson on the air, Arledge's legacy lived on. With Jackson's retirement, it's now truly ESPN's Wide World now, grown beyond Arledge's wildest dreams. Hail and farewell. And you can reach me for any corrections for any of my columns at 815-774-0184. I'd like to hear from you, Tom Jackson in DeKalb, Illinois. Can't find your phone number anywhere. Anyway, I'll be back again in the future with more news. And for the DX Audio Service, Ken Anna Strick reporting. Thanks for listening, and take her away, Fred. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ken. And on side two of this tape, we have everything that you need to know about the Akron 2006 convention. And that's because we got the answer man literally on the telephone. That's John Bowker, all the way from Sun City Center. We'll be talking to him and finding out all the details about the convention. Also, a quick reminder before we flip over to side two. If you're trying to contact me, please make sure you have the correct information to do so. All mail should go to 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. The post office box is gone. If you need to muse, we have the musings number on side two. If you need to get in touch with me, use area code 360-382-1957. If you're calling other numbers, you might not get any action at all. Let's flip over to side two for more of the DX Audio Service.
Welcome and listen in to a radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on. Everybody is a radio receiver. All you gotta do is listen for the call. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. If you're listening, you will be a believer, leaning on the truth that will never fall. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God. God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
I think, therefore, AM. WNRC, the convention station.